Sounds True presents Anatomy of the Spirit, an original audio adaptation by author and teacher Carolyn Mace. Carolyn Mace is a pioneer in the field of energy medicine and human consciousness. Since 1982, she has worked as a medical intuitive, one who can see illnesses in a patient's body through intuitive means. On Anatomy of the Spirit, Carolyn Mace unveils the hidden energetic system encoded within the human body, and how this energetic system is our direct link to the world's great wisdom traditions. And now, Anatomy of the Spirit with Carolyn Mace.
For what purpose have we been born? When I take a look at the journey into consciousness that is so active on this planet, I can't help but be delighted to study the nature of the journey itself. When I say to people, why do you think you've been born? Why are you focusing on becoming conscious? What do you hope to get out of becoming conscious? What does that mean to you? That is the richest question I think I've ever explored, and certainly for me, the one that's opened more doors in myself and in my understanding of what we're doing on this planet. One of the things I've noticed in so many of my workshops is that people are terrified to become what they say they're after, which is conscious. We really don't want to become the conscious beings we're after. We want to circle around it. We want to use it as a way of problem solving. But becoming conscious is a whole nother experience. I think we're terrified of becoming the enlightened beings we actually could be. And what I now have begun to realize is that most people come to my workshops because at an unconscious level they recognize they're sabotaging their journey toward becoming what they think of as conscious. We are afraid of becoming empowered, and I find that intriguing. And what I want to teach and explore is a version of how powerful we are. I named the book Anatomy of the Spirit because I realized I was working with an anatomical system, but it was spiritual, and that our spiritual design is as complex and well-ordered as is our biological design. You know, you grow up with this vague notion of what the spirit is, of what our spirit is. Do you ever ask anybody, where does your spirit live in your body? And they'll point to their stomach, or they'll point to their heart, or they'll say all over. You really don't think of your spirit as having a job to do until you're dead. You think of it as sort of hanging out inside of you, watching CNN until you finally get rid of your body, and then it either reaps all the rewards or you know what. As I worked as a medical intuitive, what I realized is now I think of the body as this sort of lesser evolved vehicle and the spirit as this incredible complex system that is the embodiment of eternity and the temporary and every thought and every feeling. All of this is part of this incredible energetic network that moves continually through every single cell tissue, distributing every thought, every memory, responding to every color that we see, every flower that we see, every inspiration that we have, every fear that we have, that it reorders our entire biochemical network. Every time we say a prayer, grace is received, it's distributed through the channels. Our spirit is as complex an anatomical system. It's far more so than because it's also connected to eternity, and we can't think that big yet. But I know that in describing its structure, the powers that I'll describe for you and how I describe them and where they're located are as well ordered as I'm telling you. As most of you are probably familiar with, I'm a medical intuitive. That means that for years I worked as a person who has the ability to read your energetic system, the data that your energy produces. What does that mean? It means I have the ability to interpret the energetic impulses you give off and interpret them in terms of where you're investing your energy into your history, into your fears, how much of your energy is going in that direction, and what part of your biology is paying the price for it. Because I started out doing this as somebody who knew nothing about this skill or of how the spirit behaved within the body and its genius technological capacity, it took me years to realize that there were 7 energy centers in the body. Now when I think of it, I think that when I went to write a book earlier called The Creation of Health, that's when I realized that I had organized the data in my head and exactly the way we looked, that we had 7 locations of information. And then I found out that was the chakra system. So that now when someone says to me, what is the chakra system? I think the easiest way for us to grasp it is that it's 7 data banks that are energetically located in our biology. And they store information. They store your power. They manage your power. They keep track of where you've invested your spirit. So what I'd like to discuss is where this material has taken me. No one is more surprised than me that I'm now teaching a scriptural biological pattern. When I went to school to study theology, I studied it with a bit of an arrogance, which of course is so hard to believe, but I really had this sense that I wanted to prove the teachings of the church or of any religious tradition as almost being superstitious nonsense. I find it overwhelming that I'm now about to share with you that this journey has brought me back to recognizing that we embody the scripture within our biological tissue. This is what I've written about in Anatomy of the Spirit. I want to describe that journey and then take it from there. As a medical intuitive, I wanted to know what was wrong with you. So that was easy for me to figure. I spent years doing that, you know. But still, during that time, I saw spirituality trying to explain why things went wrong with us and where we didn't understand what God was doing. I had a very immature notion of our relationship to God, and that was reflected in my interpretation of why we became ill. You can only move with God as mature as you are. After that, I then began to wonder how come people didn't become well. When I started to ask what I considered to be more mature questions, I started to see a different face of God from my point of view, a different level of maturity. I think that I was operating from a perception that becoming conscious meant that we would get explanations to why things were the way they were in our lives, that suddenly life would become reasonable and explainable, instead of recognizing that becoming conscious is the capacity to enter and live within mystery full time. Now, I want to share with you what I believe to be that mystery that lives within us and how it directs us. Now I think becoming conscious is the capacity to walk head into your mysteries and to live within them without feeling that that's the unanswered prayer, but that it's the answered prayer. Let's reverse it and hold that thought and then come with me and say, what does that have to do with the body? Well, I couldn't help but ask in my occupation, if we become more conscious, what's that going to do to cell tissue? What would that do to our body? Does consciousness change our body? Does it mean we should never get sick again? You see, from what I would call a very primal understanding of our relationship with God, we have this feeling that we go through a stage of perception that tells us becoming conscious means that God, in the paternal sense, is going to unwrap all our mysteries and make everything fine for us. And so I watch people, all of us, looking for a promised land. A promised land where everything's going to be fine and no change will ever happen without our permission. But we never get there. Because if you look at the scripture, did Moses ever make it to the promised land? The answer is no. These are archetypal journeys. Symbolic stories that capture what we will go through in our own lives. So as I looked at what is it that we should learn about ourselves in becoming conscious, I was drawn to write Anatomy of the Spirit. And here I want to share with you that in the beginning, I started to put together the material that I had taught for many years. As I was writing the book, I entered what I call the desert. Anytime you do something creative, you enter a desert where you stop and you wait for the spirit of what you're doing to meet you. When I entered the desert of anatomy, I didn't expect it to last as long as it did, especially with your editor saying, and where's the next chapter? And you can't exactly say I'm in the desert when you live in Chicago. You know what I mean? It lacks a little something. But I was teaching, and I love to teach. When I'm teaching, I feel electric. My inside was pondering this deep mystery. If I was going to teach people that we are comprised of seven centers of energy, that we are a human energy system, how come I couldn't find the counterpart to it in the Christian tradition or in the Judaic tradition? How come I couldn't find it? If we're divided into seven arenas of power, seven chakras, as in Buddhism, as in Hinduism, how come the Western side of the world didn't have anything to offer that was its equal counterpart? This really struck me as imbalanced. So now I was teaching in a classroom, and I did what I usually do, which is to begin by drawing seven circles in a line of seven chakras up and down. So I'm about to introduce the seven energy centers of the body. And I turned around, and looking at those seven circles, I suddenly saw the seven Christian sacraments slip into those seven circles, and the Judaic tree of life from the Kabbalah slip into those seven circles, and they began to pulsate right in front of my eyes. And I realized I was looking at our universal life force that was written into seven levels of power that is captured in every single tradition. Now, I want to say a word just by way of introduction of what the seven sacraments are. And the sacraments are seven rituals that began in the early Christian church that represented the taking of vows and agreements with heaven. So that the first one, baptism, is the agreement to raise the child that you brought into this life within the Christian tradition. The second sacrament, at the literal level, but I'll teach it to you at the symbolic, was the agreement to worship Jesus as your role model of God. And in keeping with that, you received a host, what's host, a little white wafer during the ceremony of Mass that represented receiving the Christ energy. That was called communion. Of course, I'll teach you the symbolic meaning of that power. But it means that you literally took the power of the Christ energy into your system. And then you received the sacrament of confirmation when you were older. A sacrament that was the agreement to live according to a certain honor code that supported the Christian tradition. The fourth sacrament was marriage. The fifth, confession, a very progressive sacrament considering the times. It was created almost 1950 years ago, actually a little older than that. It was post-Christ energy, so maybe 1990 years ago. And you realize it was the first almost therapeutic form of release that recognized the spirit needed to release the things that it was holding in it, our negativity. Confession came from that. Ordination. the sacrament that recognizes that each one of us has something of great sacred significance to give to our external world, to our social environment, to each other. And the last sacrament was extreme unction, originally meaning the anointing of the dead, the last rites. What does that mean? It means that we're supposed to finish our unfinished business before we go on. Now think about that. Before we go on to heaven, but also what I'll teach you is that it's essential to finish your unfinished business before you can go on with the next step of your life. So the sacraments were the seven sacred rituals of the Christian tradition. Now, the Tree of Life. The Tree of Life, I want to share the story that in the Judaic system, Yahweh or God says, I'm going to give you 10 powers, 10 qualities. Develop these and come home to me. And when the Kabbalists went to articulate what those 10 powers were, they partnered some of them so that they ended up on 7 levels. And this became the Tree of Life. These are the 10 qualities contained within us that we are meant to develop in this life on this planet. Now hold that thought, and let's look over at the 7 sacraments. The 7 sacraments within the Christian tradition mark the passage of power points. It marks the passage of journeys from one level of consciousness, one level of empowerment, one level of the reception of grace to the next. It never occurred to me till I did this book that these forces actually lived within our biological nature, that it wasn't just external rituals we were participating in our church or in our synagogue, but rather that if we understood that we are the Tree of Life, that we contain the 7, that we are these power systems, that in fact, that symbolic power that I'm talking to you about, that impulse contained within the meaning of these, would pulsate within our bodies. Now, just for the record, I want to say that the Tree of Life is reversed from the 7 sacraments and the chakras. I mean that when we teach chakras, or when I teach the sacraments, I start from 1 and work my way up to 7. 1 meaning the base or the chakra that's at the base of your spine, and then we move up so that we conclude at the 7th, which is at the crown. The Tree of Life, while it moves in the same way, its numbering is reversed, meaning that the top of the Tree of Life is 1 and it works its way down. So the only difference is the numbering system. Having said that, the alignment of the symbolic powers is identical. So I took the Judaic tradition, I took the Christian tradition, and I took the Eastern tradition, and I unified it, and I thought, what would we look like if I put these 3 rich traditions together? And I recognized that by merging them, each one of them contributed a universal teaching that pulsated in our body in 7 levels of power. And now if someone just said, how would I define the reason we are born, I would say this: we are born to manage power. That is the one thing we have in common. And what the sacraments are, what the chakras are, what the Tree of Life is, are all variations of names for the stages of power through which we progress in our maturation toward becoming conscious. And that if we understood and lived by these simple truths, there's a real good chance our entire spiritual biological system is going to be balanced. Now, I'm going to give you a perspective that I want to hold in your head. No, that I want you to hold in your head. And that's my definition of what does it mean to become conscious, because I want you to ponder this. From my point of view, becoming conscious means the capacity to make the journey from seeing through the illusions of your life to being able to interpret their eternal symbolic meaning. Buddha says, life is an illusion. We've had many teachers say this, but what does that mean? Let's put it in this language. When you take things literally, you're looking at things through only your five senses, from a perspective that says, only what I'm looking at is all there is, just what I can see in my eyes in this moment, what I can hear. And then you return to your interior self with that data and you interpret the meaning of what you've just seen. And from that, you will interpret the significance of why everybody who was on the street at that moment in your life was there. Why someone said what they did to you at work. And you'll interpret it literally. When that happens, you generally start to lose your power because rarely is the literal interpretation of anything accurate. How often, when you take something literally, have you discovered that that was truth? But in fact, truth is the capacity to look at something, remain detached, and then say, what's the symbolic meaning of this? Now here's where you got to understand what symbolic means. Symbolic does not just mean, what does it mean for you in the meaningful sense? Symbolic is also the capacity to see something universal, as if you were participating in something that belonged to everybody and you were a part of it. Let me give you an example. It's very easy to take a criticism personally, to take a remark someone makes to you personally. Someone might be very abrupt with you one day and you decide that they're angry at you and you build this entire scenario around why that person reacted to you the way they did, only to find out that it had nothing to do with you and you spent the whole day losing your energy over a piece of fiction you put in your head. Whereas, if you had stood back from it and said, wait a minute, anything's possible, and I'm going to see this symbolically. I can see that there are good days and there are bad days. There's all kinds of dramas, and I'm not going to lose my energy over this. The next thing you know, you would be far more centered instead of losing your power. The capacity to see things symbolically is what the journey of becoming conscious is all about. Now, let's take this one step further. The more you can understand the symbolic nature of life, the more its energetic presence can penetrate into your biological nature. I'm going to say that again. And maybe the best way for me to say this is to share a talk I heard someone give once upon a time. A marvelous human being. I lived in Alaska for a brief period of time. And there was a man there who was very special. His name was Joseph. He was local, and lots of people knew him, and they respected him a great deal. And one day he said to me, this is one of those power moments that change your lives. He said to me, you know, lots of people come up here to study the beauty of Alaska. We have beautiful plants and we have beautiful trees. And he says, so they study how fast and how long it takes a tree to get tall and how much water a plant needs and how much sunlight a plant needs. And he says, but you know, they never ask about the spirit of the plant. He says, so they leave here and they'll know how much fertilizer or how much water, but they can't wake the plant up. They can't get its spirit to talk to them. He said, now we can. Therefore, the plant comes and heals. What does it mean to be able to wake the energy up that's contained within something? Not just contained within a plant, but contained within an experience in your life. Every single experience of our lives, every single relationship, every single moment contains a unit of energy that is meant to come into our system and empower us, not disempower us. We're not meant to be confused by our lives. We're meant to be empowered by them. The trigger point is the capacity to say, only good is happening here, even though it might hurt. The trigger point is the ability to see your life symbolically. Now, as I walk you through the merger of the sacraments and the tree of life, I'm going to share with you the things that I learned in writing this because for me it was such an extraordinary, universal, archetypal eye-opener. Now, let's go into your first chakra. Let's journey in there. You're sitting on your first chakra. You know where it is. Now, think symbolically, that in your first chakra you contain the sacrament of baptism. From a literal point of view, baptism is the act of a tribe taking a newborn member and ritually pouring water over its head and saying, we accept responsibility for the life we've taken into our tribe, our family. That's the literal meaning of baptism. What does it mean symbolically? Imagine that symbolically, baptism is the experience of you returning to your family the perception that you fully accept the life you incarnated into with them, that you fully accept and respect the entire network of tribe that was pulled together for this incarnation. You baptize your family, you return it. And in doing that, you take your spirit back from the perception that there was ever an error or a mistake with the birthing process of you into your family. When you think of all of the therapies and all of the years people spend in therapy, what they're trying to do is take their spirit back from the perception that they had incarnated into the wrong family. They are, in fact, acting out the sacrament of baptism, if you can see it from a symbolic point of view. Then add to that, what's the meaning of the tree of life? The root of the tree of life is the energy of Shekinah. It's the energy of the impulse of the connection to Gaia, to the life force. It is so intriguing that symbolically, your first chakra in the Judaic tradition in the tree of life is connected to all community, what they call the 12 tribes of Israel. Now, why is that symbolic? Because the number 12 in and of itself converts to everything. 12 tribes of Israel, 12 signs of the zodiac, 12 disciples, 12 months of the year, 12 hours of the day twice, i.e. 24. What does that mean? 12 primary magnetic fields of life. Imagine that your center has 12 magnetic, energetic threads connecting you, what's called groundedness, to all that is, to all life, to all forms of life, to the animal kingdom, to the nature kingdom, that we are magnetically connected to Gaia and a part of all that is. And you put this together with the meaning of the first chakra, your chakra center, the part of your body that connects your energetics to your legs, to your hips, to your capacity to stand, to your capacity to feel strength and strong, and then put these two together. Put all three of them together, and you get the message that in order to stand strong, the truth we need to live in is that all is one. We are one with all. This is the truth that is, shall we say, symbolically asleep in our first chakra, that is awakened when we begin to understand we are all part of life, that all that is our family, that our family is more than just our biological family, that we are part of the family of all of nature, of all nationalities, that all is one. Now, you know what's so exquisite is we learn this truth. The first thing you learn on the journey toward becoming conscious is that all is one. That's not a new truth. That's as old as it gets. But I don't think we've ever applied that as a biological law. I think instead it's been one of those truths like love everybody that we never quite get around to in practice. We never quite do. It's very hard to actually live by that perception that all is one. So it takes some imagination to begin to think, I'm magnetically connected to all forms of life, to all that is. Now, I'm going to add another kind of interesting little note here. And that's that, you know, as we embrace these truths, as we begin to take the truth, all is one, okay, what does that mean? Past being a theory, past being a lovely spiritual goal that maybe our great-grandchildren will get to, but we won't. The fact is, once it's in your system, it has authority. Once a truth is in your system, it pulsates with authority. And my sense is that once you have a truth like all is one located at the base of your spine, pulsating, boom, 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 it directs you toward a behavioral code. It directs you toward a symbolic archetypal universal behavioral code, where all of a sudden you might walk down the street and see somebody that you would instinctively judge and think, oh, why doesn't that person get a haircut or pull all those beads out of his pocket or whatever kind of judgment you throw at somebody. All of a sudden you get a hit in your psyche that says, take that back, that's not okay. But it's stronger than the one you used to get, and you think, where is that coming from? Where is that coming from? Or you might be watching the news and you see floods in China, huge floods in China, or disasters in Korea, or in parts of the world you may never physically visit, but suddenly you have a magnetic feeling, a need to perhaps respond even in prayer for them. That's the activity of that power, all is one, acting through you. I would even go so far as to say that I think that that truth, as it matures in us, when it's there in us in a baby form, it doesn't expect great, big, huge responses from us. What's the baby form of all is one? Just what I'm saying. You know, you might see something happening on the TV in another part of the world and you release a prayer. But truth matures. Truth matures. It grows with you. It begins to direct you in different ways. The more mature the truth gets, the more is expected of your biological spiritual system. What if, as this world increases in its madness and negativity, people are needed to have that negativity run through their system and ground it into the earth? What if you get a unit of negativity to run through your system that isn't yours? It's impersonal. Because all is one. It becomes okay. It's like the notion of being strong enough to carry someone else's cross because it's not yours, but it doesn't matter because all is one. We are asked to live out that truth. Now, when you look at the fact that what if that is one of the truths we're meant to master on this journey toward becoming conscious? What if that is one of the truths? I believe that it is. I believe that it is. And so look at the evolution that we go through. The first stage of it is we begin to play with it in the biological sense. We decide all is one, but that's a biological truth. It's people who look like us are one. People who are in the same religion as us are one. People who are in the same planet as us are one. We are one biologically. Eventually, that truth won't carry through. It's not strong enough to go the distance because it's not the mature truth. It's going to break down and the next level of its maturity emerges. Now, watch how this works. When you go through the breakdown of the biological version of all is one, you go into a conflict with your tribe. You'll go into some kind of conflict with your biological tribe, but what's really happening is that that truth is breaking down so that its more mature form can emerge, and your spirit is saying, come on, I want to show you that all is one beyond just the biological sameness. Now I'm going to show you that all is one in the universal sense or in the planetary sense. And suddenly you're liberated to go explore that. Now, when that impulse starts and it says, all is one biologically is too small a truth to contain me anymore. I've got to get out of here. I've got to walk this journey and discover that all is one universally. If you prevent yourself from doing that, you become ill, or you become depressed, or you become sad in a way because your spirit is saying, come on, it's time for you to move on, to take the next level of your journey. And your biology will pay the price. That is where I'm beginning to believe that if we stop and prevent truth from emerging and becoming active in our body, we enter into losing our spirit because we can't nurture it. As we learn all is one, I really believe that we develop a highly sensitized biomagnetic system to plant life, to nature life. We become more sensitized to the Gaia vibration, to all that is on this earth. Take it one step further. It means that that becomes the juice through which we can heal life. where all of a sudden you go from being an ordinary gardener to an unbelievable gardener. Or you go from being ordinary with the healing of animals or the care of animals to extraordinary. There is a different magnetic current running through you. And that's when this truth is awakened in the mature sense. So let's say that when you recognize your first chakra contains the archetypal meaning of baptism, the capacity to look at all of life and say, I wasn't just baptized into life with my family. I am now returning the ritual and baptizing all of life as part of my family. And in doing that, I will honor the honor code of Gaia, which is all is one. I am part of all is one. That impulse wakes up in your first chakra and begins to beep, 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 beep. And you begin to live by this incredible light force that is now pulsating in your first chakra. Now, let's go to the second. The second chakra is, of course, your lower back, your hip area, your genital area. This is the energy that's connected from the chakra sense. This is the energy that connects us in the language of chakras to one-on-one relationships. So that the first chakra is tribal or group, and the second is one-on-one. My issues with control, my issues with sexuality, money, all power issues are in this center of the body. So what are the two forces from the tree of life and the sacraments that belong here? Look at the sacrament. This is the center of the sacrament of communion, to have union. Now, from a literal point of view, the sacrament of communion is to receive a little host that represents the energy of Jesus. What does that mean? The energy of the teacher Jesus in the Christian tradition, they call the Son of God, a title that is given to this incredible avatar who taught us and modeled a new way of being, activating our internal bond to God before Jesus, for example. No one in the Jewish tradition would dare look directly up to heaven and say, Abba or Father. Nobody. You had to go to the temple. You had to have a rabbi or the temple elders pray for you. And so he looked at them and he said, oh yeah, watch this. And he looks straight up and says, hey, Father, listen to me. I'm talking to you. And what shook them up is that God did. And what he was saying is, I'm not doing anything special. I'm telling you, you are this close to God. I am telling you, this is what you were made of. And in order to get there, I'm going to show you. You go through the heart. This reception, this receiving the host, is symbolic of recognizing we are in union with God. Now, it also represents a very interesting high-voltage spiritual truth that says whoever is in our lives in union with us, communion, in union, whoever we are with one-on-one or whoever we have contact with, we have the capacity to see that as divinely organized as opposed to earthly organized. Now, what does that mean? You know, in pondering for so long why people don't heal, I think there is a tremendous naivete in human consciousness. Well, bigger than that, there is a tremendous naivete. And that's that somehow or other, becoming conscious means the end of pain. It means the end of being uncomfortable in the physical body. It means the end of all disease. It means the end of all bad things. I think that's somewhat of a child's notion of what they think God is. If you look at all of the great teachers, from Jesus to Buddha to whomever you wish to look at, they have never made a perfect place for themselves on earth. What does that tell us? So the greater capacity within us is not to look at each other as though the answer to becoming conscious is only to have painless relationships in our lives. Sometimes we must have and go through great pain in order to get our spirit back from something, in order to understand. If, for example, you were someone who suffered from great jealousy or great envy, what would be the best teacher? What would be the best teacher? To send you someone that you were tremendously envious of. until you finally were able to mature past this and say to yourself, I can't handle my response to this. What is wrong with me? It is not that other person. And then you'd be able, what if in that moment the other person were to turn around and look at you and say, okay, now you know what I'm doing in your life. I was sent here. I was sent here to help you heal this part of yourself. What if in that moment you could actually see that? Or what if you're in a relationship with somebody and the time comes for you to learn that you are afraid to move on, that you're afraid to listen to the guidance you pray for all the time? What would be the best teacher? It would be someone who would leave you, someone who would force you to move on. Otherwise, you'd be hiding behind them. So if I were your angel, I would send someone with the order, stay with that person for 3 months and let them believe you'll be there forever. And when 3 months comes, I'd make them leave you as your angel, not to hurt you, though it would cause pain, but to get you to see, my God, am I afraid? I am so afraid of being alone. And it would be heaven's way of saying, but you're not. And then what if the light goes on and you take a look at that and think, what a rich learning experience that was. I'm no longer afraid to be alone. If I could take that, I could take anything. What if in that instance, the person you had so resented for leaving you turned around and said, now you know what I was doing in your life. I was ordered to leave you, not to harm you, but to see you become strong. That is what the symbolic meaning of communion is. The capacity to see a spiritual reason for every single person with whom you are in contact in your life. Now, if you can do that, imagine the difference in your spirit of what would be going on in the strength of your spirit and consequently the strength of your biological center. What if you were able to approach everybody and hold in your mind, I'm going to see you through divine communion. If it kills me, I will see you this way. And you hold that thought and you pray, God, give me grace because this is tough. Give me grace because this is tough. You may get a sense that the best thing you can do is just release. The best thing you can do is just leave them alone. Still, that is an act of divine union if you do it without hatred, if you do it without fear, if you do it without judgment. I want you to imagine that that's your act of giving a host a small piece of light to another person. Now, let's add the tree of life. Where do you see that power center? What lives there in the tree of life? Yesod. That is the name of the power. What does that mean? This is so exciting. Oh, the bottom of the tree of life, the first center, Shekinah, is the feminine energy of Gaia. Now we move into Yesod, the masculine. The phallus. This is considered the center and impulse of creativity and creation itself. Look at that as an internal power in your body, an impulse that says you have to create. You have to create to thrive. You must create. What does creation require? Other people. Communion with others. Creation requires communion with others. So this impulse, in order to thrive, in order to create well, we need the energy and the impulse and the center. We need contact with other people. This is that energy that is centered in this part of our body. It draws us, whether it is into creation sexually to create a new life, or creation energetically to create art, to create thought, to create a beautiful home, to create a gorgeous garden. What you create is irrelevant. What you need to recognize is that you have to create in order to thrive. And all things qualify as creation. Every act can qualify as an act of creation, no matter what you do. Whether you're creating the most beautiful desk for yourself to sit at, or you're writing the great American novel, is irrelevant. The fact is, all things are acts of creation. Every attitude you have can foster an act of creation. Now, imagine that your second chakra is radiating an impulse, and that in this part of your body, there is a universal truth that is contained from all of these traditions merged into one. If the first center of your body has the truth, all is one. The second contains the truth, honor one another. The one-on-one honor code. Honor one another. Now, sometimes that's very hard to live by. But I can't help but returning again and again to when I look at why people don't heal. They can't get their spirit back from the illusion that people in their lives had come into their lives for destructive reasons. They can't shake that illusion. And you know what's killing them is the illusion. Not the truth, the illusion. They need to hold on because your second chakra contains your energy of vengeance. It contains the shadow side of it, which is your need to want to eye for an eye somebody else. And it can be very hard to think and replace that with this symbolic notion of communion, to image an energetic white host leaving your body and going to this other person and saying, I am sending you the God force. I am sending you the God force with the notion that you are in my life for some divine reason, and I want to see the divine reason, not the shadow side. That can be the hardest thing you're ever going to do. But what is the journey of becoming conscious if not doing just this? Becoming conscious is not the capacity to get an angel to show up on your doorstep and say, oh, you want to know why that person's in your life? Here, I'll show you. Here's the paperwork on it. And you're absolutely right. That person's a horrible person. We in heaven agree with you. That's not going to happen. The journey is to live the mystery and do it with spiritual elegance. To live the mystery and to make choices while in the mystery that reflect that you have faith in a divine hand operating behind this all the time. That's the real test. That's why the more unconscious you are about something, the more you've got to recognize that they're sending you deeper into the mystery. And if you're praying, give me an answer, you're saying the wrong prayer. You're only going to get more lights out. Instead, say, okay, I've got it. I'm in the mystery. If you have no other choices that you can make, refer to the tree of life. Refer to what's in your own body and how you're structured. And take a look at where you're stuck and say, I'm resenting somebody. What chakra? That's my second chakra. Now refer to the powers in the tree of life. And what are we supposed to learn there? That all is one. That we are to honor one another. So you look at honoring one another and you think, this is tough work because I really resent this person. This is big, huge, tough work. What if the best you can do is to look at Yasad, the power of creation, and say, if I don't find a way to bless this, negativity will be created. And part of that negativity will be in your own biological system. It'll be in your own biological system or in your biological environment, the larger environment in your life. How can it not be? If you hold resentment, you've got to plant it somewhere. You don't put it in a warehouse. You put it in your cell tissue. You put it in your life force. So instead, run over to this notion of communion, as hard as it is to do this. And close your eyes and say, okay, this is tough work. And image yourself saying, God, give me a bullet of light. Let it go through me, go down to my second chakra, and let it go directly to this person I so deeply resent with the prayer. You're in my life for a reason. Let's get out of this shadow together. Let's empower each other instead of disempower. I pray for that. Now that brings you closer to consciousness. You're doing what we are biologically, spiritually structured to do. And every time you feel resentment come up, instead send symbolically that little host of power to that other person. Just say, I will not violate my own tree of life. I'm sending them energy. Okay, you ready for the third one? Third, up we go, one more. This is your center. Let's go first into the chakra. The area that I'm speaking of is your solar plexus. The third chakra, the center, is your solar plexus. Covers your stomach, your colon area, the digestive part, the pancreas. We're talking this center of life, if you will. This is your center of self-esteem. This is your center of ego, of personality. This is your center of how you feel about yourself. And, of course, this is connected biologically to your internal organs in that area, to your pancreas, to your stomach, and all of it's connected, you know, to the colon, the whole nine yards below the waist. The first, second, and third chakras, of course, are our strongest connection to the physical form of our life, to the external physical form of our life. Now, this part, your chakra, is also your center of intuition. I think people think intuition is, or intuitive instincts, is something that's in their mind. I think that's why they can never find it, because it's not there. Because your mind can come up with the word intuition. You think, therefore, there it lives. No, no. It lives in your third chakra. This is your center. Because it has everything to do with self-esteem. This is your center of self-esteem. Without self-esteem, how can you possibly follow your own intuitive current? If you don't respect yourself, if you don't believe in yourself, can you think for a moment that you're going to follow your own guidance? For example, what if I were your angel and I decide, okay, we're going to play hardball, and I appear at the foot of your bed one day and I say to you, wake up. We in heaven have had the greatest idea. We think you should start this business. And it would help hundreds of people, maybe thousands, and we'll be there with you. You're going to run it financially day to day from the earth point of view, but not really, because we have the eternal plan totally worked out. Now, go contact so-and-so and get the ball rolling. Then I, as your angel, evaporate, and you wake up, and you think, I've had this vision. I've just been told to start a business. Oh, my gosh. So you get going, and you go to your best friend, and you say to your best friend, I've had this vision. And your best friend says, you? You? Get out of here. Since when did you people like you start having visions? Ordinary mortals like you, OMs for short, OM, right? What do you think OM means, all right? So then you decide, you must be right. I didn't have a vision because a vision couldn't happen to me. And then your madness begins because your sense of self goes out to this other person. How many times have you given your sense of self out? Now let's look at the tree of life. Let's jump into the tree of life and the sacrament that, if we understood, would be our key to self-esteem. What are the powers we need to activate this center of divine instruction? Because what is intuition but divine instruction? Without these powers developed, you can't hear your own intuitive ability. Now, what's so rich is, instead of going through the ordinary door of, I must take a seminar on intuition, let's go through the tree of life. What does heaven expect us to grow and thrive in our tree at this level? What are the powers that would give us that sense of divine contact, divine intuition? There are two powers here. Remember I said there were 10 powers in the tree of life. And some are partnered so that we have 7 levels. And the first partnership comes here in the third chakra. You have the partnership of the quality of integrity. Netzah is integrity. The tree of life requires integrity. And Hod. Hod means the majesty of God or endurance. In this level of our body, in order for our spirit to thrive, we have got to develop integrity and endurance. From this comes divine majesty in this center of our body. What sacrament complements this? Confirmation, the sacrament of the honor code. This is the center of the body that embraces the meaning of the ritual of bar mitzvah. This is the center of the body that captures the maturation process when the young man goes to become a warrior and faces the journey and slays the bear or the tiger by himself to come home. What power is he bringing home in that animal that he has slain? the power of endurance. He's saying that he has activated the power in this center of his body, in his third chakra. The tribe automatically understands that if this part of your body is activated, if this power is activated, they understand automatically that there are certain honor powers, powers that go with an internal honor code that go with it. One is integrity. Isn't that fascinating? Integrity goes with that. A sense of loyalty goes with that. The capacity to give your word and keep it goes with that. All of this resonates to this center. The power to endure needs to be developed. Now let's take a look at that. Endurance is a power that is required within the human energy system for everything, for creation, for healing, for the maturation of your own consciousness. When I see people complaining about the journey of becoming conscious because there's not enough answers on the road or because they're not healing fast enough, I know what heaven is up to. They're teaching you endurance. They're teaching you endurance. Now look, I want you to look symbolically. Your third chakra, look through it with me. This is the center of your body through which you should see every struggle in the physical world that you don't understand. I want you to look through this. And instead of seeing the people involved, go through the qualities of what's expected of me. They're testing my integrity. They're testing my fiber. Heaven's testing my capacity to endure. Instead of looking at the mystery and saying, make it shorter, make it shorter, turn around and say, I can do it. I can endure this. I know what you're up to. And I'll endure it with integrity. And then you look and say to yourself, and I'll confirm your own symbolic energy of confirmation, the honor code you write into your own spiritual biological system that says, along with integrity, what's my definition of integrity? When you think about the role of honor, I want you to think about the relationship you have between you and God and whether or not you keep your word and have a code that maintains the integrity of your spirit. What is your tribe supposed to teach you? What is the first level of honor that we learn? It's how to be honorable within our family. And that type of honor means what I might think of as physical honor and not stealing and moral honor of that level. You learn the basics of social honor, social tribal honor. The next level that we learn is the honor code between individuals. That if you give your word to somebody, you keep it. That you act with honor in relationships, one-on-one. The honor code follows our tree of life. But the third level of the honor code is between you and yourself. And I think this is a level where we tend to eclipse ourselves. I don't think we tend to recognize how significant it is to be able to say to yourself, tomorrow you're going to start walking 1 hour a day and keep that code to yourself. Or to say to yourself, you know, I think that from this point on, I am not going to allow negative thoughts about my future to enter into my energy field. Or you take a look at your relationship between you and God, and you say, I'm going to begin a discipline that helps strengthen my spirit. What kind of discipline would that be, and why would that be tied to your honor code? Again and again and again, I want to tie everything I'm teaching you back to one basic, rich question. What does it mean to become conscious? And what does that journey look like? That journey is the journey of finding out how strong our spirits are, of finding out what we're made of behind our eye, not in front of it. In every single spiritual tradition that has a monastic lifestyle, there is the journey of the monk or the nun who enters into that isolated relationship between the self and God. in which what is at stake is the strength of one's own spirit with God. So you say, I'm going to keep a pattern with you, God, that is trans my physical behavior. I'm past monitoring my physical behavior. I'm past that. I know I won't steal from anybody. I'm not going to do that. I'm past learning about that kind of thing. Now I want to enter into what it means to learn the nature of honor in the invisible sense of it between God and me. When I say to God, okay, I want only pure thoughts in me. And as a matter of honor, I will spend a certain amount of time each day emptying my body, emptying my spirit. I'll spend a certain amount of time each day in prayer or in meditation or in silence or in walking, but it's dedicated to simply the act of interior listening. And you keep that on days, even when you're distracted and you think, I don't want to do that today. And you recognize, no, I have to. This is what spiritual honor is all about. This is between God and me. This is between God and me. And you begin to keep a pattern, a certain time, a certain entry where you read, you fill yourself on that day and you begin to image this. I want you to image this. That there's a place in your house where you enter and you sit still. And in that place, when you enter it, every day as a matter of honor, heaven shows up too. Not just you. Every day as a matter of honor. And in that process, you begin to take a very deep and rich look at how well you're managing your spirit while you're on this journey. And you take a look at your energy centers. And you take a look at your heart and how well you're managing the energy of the heart. Are you forgiving? The strongest requirement of the heart is not just love. It's the counterpart, forgiveness. Can you let go? Can you forgive people who've hurt you? Can you forgive yourself? Look at what an intense struggle that is. And return at every single day like a code of honor to that point and say, God, I'm melting this. I'm melting my anger. I have to accept the choices you've made for me and let me give you a larger perspective. Every time you don't understand the things that are going on in your life, from now on, tell yourself, I've entered another mystery. Get excited about it. Treat the unknown with enthusiasm. Because the moment the unknown starts, the gods are active with you. The unknown is something to embrace and then return to what it means every single time you're in the unknown. Brace yourself because you're going to have questions put to you. New choices. And when you don't know what to do, return to your honor code. Return to what it means. I've made vows to myself. I know I will not compromise my spirit. No matter how frightened I am, I will not sell myself for money. I won't negotiate myself because I'm afraid to be alone. I'm not going to do that anymore. And I tell you something, as your angelic coach, that your honor code's going to be tested again and again and again. And heaven will say to you, oh yeah, watch this. And the next thing you know, something exquisitely tempting comes your way. And you find yourself saying, oh, I'll just compromise myself just a little bit. And then the next thing you know, you find yourself hearing in your dreams, you did it, you broke your promise. And you return to reminding ourselves, oh, that's why I was born. I was born to learn the management of honor. I was born to learn the management of my power. Again and again, if I could teach anybody any particular truth that I think is of the most value, it's literally about how powerful we are, how incredibly connected and interconnected we are, and how your entire energetic field begins to vibrate at a higher frequency when you look at someone else and say, I'm going to see you through the lens of communion. I'm going to make a vow, an honor code to myself, that instead of being afraid of a new person, or afraid of another person's talent, or afraid of another person's genius, I'm going to look at that person through the sacrament of communion and hold that thought no matter how hard it is. No matter how hard it is, I will hold that thought. Then see that thought penetrate down to your first chakra, to your tribal, and feel your energy. Connect that big truth to the roots of your tree, saying, everybody that surrounds me supports me, even if they don't know it. Even if they don't know it. You hold that. You hold that. That nature, that interior honor code between you and God also has this reverse side to it. And that's when you say, look, God, you take care of this. Recognize it's a matter of heaven's honor. It will be done. It will be done. Your needs will be taken care of. So when I teach this level of honor, take a look at yourself and ask yourself if you keep your word to yourself. And if you recognize how important it is to say, I think it's time that as a matter of spiritual honor, you live the life as a forgiving person. How would that change your life? And if you make that promise to yourself without allowing yourself time excuses, it means that you can't say, well, give me time, I'll do it. I find this so fascinating as a matter of consciousness. I am convinced that the reason we take so much time to forgive another person is because it's such a powerful act that our entire life will change as a consequence. So the reason we stay angry is not because we find it hard to forgive, but because we want change to happen more slowly. We stay angry because it slows the speed of change. I offer you the perception that if you were actually to start laughing hysterically, hilariously, in the most lighthearted, liberated way, saying, I'm finally free of all that pain. I'm letting that go, and I'm going to decide to believe as a matter of honor that if I believe in a benevolent universe that created me for only good reasons, then I am going to invest my spirit in the positive side of the mystery. And just say, okay, unfold in a positive, beautiful way for why things are happening as they are, for why my body might not be feeling well, or why my life might be taking a very difficult turn. Instead of letting the mystery scare you, as a matter of honor to yourself in your own relationship with God, say, I'm going to trust that you are leading me somewhere special. And I'm going to invest my energy in that. Now, think this through. We are going through and journeying through your spiritual body as though it is your tree of life. And we're about to go off into the branches, the upper part, the fourth, fifth, and sixth, and seventh. But the third is the passage point to see how healthy the rest of the branches can be. And the third is that sense of personal honor. If you negotiate your spirit, if you break your word, even to yourself, you're chipping away at the strength that it takes to make an honorable spirit, to make a spirit strong. Now, what significance is that? What if you break your word to yourself and you say to yourself, what difference does that make? No one will know but me. Ha, ha, ha. First of all, what does it take to heal? If you say to your spirit, I've got to heal this disease in my body. And your spirit said to you, fine, but you've told me that. You've changed your mind. You've gone this way. You've gone that way. How do I know what you want? You've never kept your word to yourself. Think about that. Think about your capacity to talk to yourself. Never mind what other people know of you. How do you know yourself? I now think that much of the depression I witness in people, much of their inability to love themselves, is actually the inability to respect themselves because they've broken their word to themselves so often that they don't take themselves seriously or with enough honor. They don't honor themselves enough. and they expect other people to honor you. No, no. Honor begins from within. This is the third chakra. Let's go up to the fourth chakra. The fourth chakra is, of course, the heart, the center, located in the chest, of course, but it includes the lungs, the back, the center point. What's so rich is that the fourth chakra, no matter what tradition you're in, is always the center point. It's always the balance point. So that the balance point of our life force is not how smart we are, but how well we manage the heart. The heart's in charge. How well we manage the heart. Now, what does that mean? Remember, we're asking this question against the background of understanding what does it mean to become conscious? What role does the heart have to play in the journey of consciousness? In the tree of life, the quality we have as a reference point is called Tiferet, and it means harmony, balance, beauty in all things. Now, let's look. Let's take that force of love and put it in the fourth chakra and look through Tiferet. And it is instruction to see or to seek or to put balance, emotional balance, into all things. What's emotional balance mean? What does that mean? I'm going to return for a moment to the question of why we don't heal, woven into the question of what does it mean to become conscious? And now add to it the fourth chakra in the tree of life and the energy of Tiferet. And what you have is a tapestry that suggests that the beginning point of becoming conscious is to take that energy of our heart and look at all the pain and the wounds in it. And that we need to move through the wounds toward creating a point of balance in ourselves. How do we do that? However do we do that? Let's take a look at the fourth sacrament and add it there. The fourth sacrament is marriage. Isn't that a funny sacrament? To say, now what are we going to do with it from a symbolic point of view? But let's look at it from the point of view of becoming conscious. Your first marriage has to be to yourself. Your first marriage needs to be to you, where you make vows to yourself to take care of yourself, to love yourself, to respect yourself, to keep yourself in balance, to know what you need for the management of your own emotional center, your own heart. Now, take a look at Tiferet, that energy that says, bring emotional balance into all things. The requirements there, as you expand on that energy of what is beauty, what is harmony. Always in the Kabbalah, it returns to the teaching of harmony. What gives us harmony? I think we so often reduce the definition of these things to the most primal pleasure level that we can find. Harmony means everybody's happy. That's not what harmony means in the symbolic or spiritual sense. It means that we've balanced our emotional energy, that we are giving love as well as receiving it, that we are as capable of nurturing another person as we are of allowing ourselves to be nurtured. Now, what does that mean? So often, when people begin to explore the nature of nurturing, they think that it means to let someone near them only when they're in pain. We have yet to develop a model that says the healthy person needs nurturing too. We don't have a model for that. We have a model that says in order to be nurtured, we have to be shattered to request a hug. Hug my pieces, never hug my whole. So as a consequence, we have to stay out of balance in order to have the right to come up to someone and say, I need touch, would you hold me? We never do that out of strength. We have to be shattered first. Now, think of what it would mean if we suddenly thought, wait a minute, why do I have to be weak and wounded in order to celebrate my strength, my intimacy, the fact that I'm capable of loving, the fact that I want nurturing? Why isn't nurturing also the capacity to say, I'm celebrating the fact that I've created something. Come over and nurture that with me. Come over and nurture my creativity. Come over and nurture the fact that I'm a wonderful mother. I'm a terrific father. Come over and celebrate that with me. Why don't we nurture our strength? This is what it means to have balance, to nurture ourselves when we are strong as well as when we are weak. It goes both ways. It goes both ways. We're afraid of becoming emotionally healthy because we have got to break down this other model that says our only privilege of intimate contact is when we're broken. In keeping with what it means to balance, take a look at the nature of what it would mean to have a marriage code with yourself, a marriage vow, a, shall we say, promise to yourself that you will always look out after what you need, that you'll explore your own needs. The sacrament of marriage means you'll take yourself seriously as your own partner, as a primary partner. Recognize that if you don't know yourself beyond knowing that primitive level of what makes you happy and not happy and whether or not you can like smoke in the room, that's not knowing yourself. Knowing yourself is knowing that every couple of years I receive that next spiritual impulse that says go exploring even deeper. Every couple of years the mystery wakes up and it starts. Every couple of years the mystery takes over, and all of a sudden, I have that feeling in me, that feeling of isolation, that feeling that I'm not sure what I want, who I am. Every couple of years, the mystery wakes up. And when the mystery wakes up, I have to do something about it. I can't silence the mystery. I can't silence it. So your promise to love yourself, your sacrament of marriage, is to make an agreement to say to yourself, when the mystery wakes up, you'll love yourself enough to explore it. You'll love yourself enough to know that I can't stop power from coming into my system. That you'll love yourself enough to become empowered. Now, that may sound almost paradoxical, but I want to explain something. Most people are terrified of becoming the empowered person they are seeking. What I now recognize is people take my workshops to become disempowered because it's their emerging power that's driving them to madness. If I said to you, my friends, how many of you need me, an intuitive, to tell you when you're unhappy? Isn't that preposterous? How many of you need me to tell you something's wrong in your life? It's time to move on. You don't need that. The fact is you're terrified of those feelings. That's how strongly intuitive you are. You're terrified to follow your own heart. When your heart says, come on now, it's time to let go of being angry. Come on now, it's time to move on. How many of you actually listen to your heart? You want someone else to do it, so you'll seek a relationship. But that's not what the sacrament of marriage is all about. That's not what the tree of life requires. It requires that you take a look at yourself and you say, you know what? I've got to be strong enough to listen to my heart. I've got to be strong enough to hear that. I have to be strong enough to forgive myself, to forgive others. I need to be what I expect from someone else. So that when you find a partner in your life, it's not because you're afraid to go into your heart, so you send him or her. It's because you've been there and you know what it needs. And then you take a look and you think, The heart thrives. Return to the tree of life, to the nature of Tiferet. It thrives only with harmony. It thrives only with balance. So you think these are the things that keep you centered. The fourth chakra is the center part of your body. Now, there are so many epidemics of diseases in this part. It is no wonder that the majority of diseases are in the fourth chakra, heart disorders, cardiac problems of all kinds, breast cancers, asthmatic disorders. We have an epidemic of fourth chakra crises in our culture. Why? From my point of view, from the symbolic point of view, let's whisk away and take a look at it symbolically. It's because we are very actively pursuing the opening of our heart, but we're terrified of what it means to become emotionally conscious. So what we've done is we've reduced it to thinking that emotional clarity is the capacity to speak only about what makes us feel good or who or what makes us not feel good. We've yet to take it that one step further that says it is the capacity to explore ourselves fully empowered and to actually go into and follow the impulses of the heart that says, it's time to leave here. Follow this. Just follow this voice. It's strong. Follow this guidance. Or the heart impulse that says, you know what? You should create something. It should look like this. Follow your heart. Do this. Or the heart impulse that says, call this person. You know you want to forgive that person. Do it. The capacity to follow the heart. I'm going to return you to the notion that what it means to make a marriage vow in the symbolic sense to yourself is that you have to be the partner to yourself that you think you're looking for in somebody else. You have to be that. And my sense is if you can make that promise to yourself, you are only all the richer a partner to somebody else, as well as the capacity to form and expand heart partnerships with everybody else, to create harmony wherever you go. This is that energy in the fourth chakra of your body, the energy that is required so that the heart thrives and the tree of life, if you will, thrives.